Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, I'll just say your name and your title at the Library of Congress.
I'm Roswell Encina. I'm the Chief Communications Officer for the Library of Congress.
Yes, and we are talking an annual tradition now about the annual summer movies on the lawn right outside the Library of Congress. You guys will be screening National Film Registry selections. So it's a cool way for folks to see these classics and, I guess, instant classics. Hey, thanks for doing this. I guess before we get into the lineup, you know, give me a sense of like how many years has it been around now?
It's surprising. We've been doing this since 2017. How fast time flies. And, you know, we've been picking films out of the National Film Registry to spotlight the National Film Registry and all these amazing films that have been part of the cultural and historical part of our country.
Awesome. So, yes, instead, speak a little more to that. Like, instead of a, how do we say, instead of, you know, just a museum piece, a name
sure.
selected and thrown on a shelf with
Excellent.
A big plaque, how it's like a living history to enjoy these
yeah.
selections.
So, you know, these films have all been kind of pop culture favorites. You either grew up with them or you just remember the feeling when you saw them in the theater. And I think that's what makes these films so exciting for the people who watch the films outside the Library of Congress. They remember watching A Princess Bride. They remember watching Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theater or when they first discovered it. So we want to kind of rehash those feelings for folks and enjoy the view of the Library of Congress while they're watching the film.
I love it. And one final thing, just to speak to the last part that you were talking about, enjoy the view of the Library of Congress while they're watching it. You know what, where exactly, if our folks head down, maybe they hop off the metro or they drive or walk or whatever, like where exactly is it located in relation to the Library of Congress building?
So we are going to be like right outside the Thomas Jefferson building, right at the intersection of Independence and Second Avenue. We usually do it on the other side of the library, but there's a little some construction there right now. But we believe this view is perfect. You have a view of the Library of Congress. You have a view of our other buildings, but you also see, of course, the U.S. Capitol building. So it couldn't be any more D.C. than that. And right before each film, we'll have a little concert just to get, you know, to get the mood going. And right while we're waiting for the sun to go down.
Awesome. That's a really cool aspect. Yeah, I kind of view it as, you know, for so many years, the screen on the green was the big tradition. I think HBO did it out on the National Mall, and everyone was sad to see that go. But you all started sort of right up after that, and it's like not basically in the same general area. You're outside on a lawn area right by the, you know, the heart of DC. It's great.
Absolutely. And I have to confess, we that was the opportunity that was open to us. So when Screen on the Greens ended, we decided it was a great opportunity for the library to jump on this. So we decided, you know, we have the real estate, we have the view, why not do it outside the library so people could enjoy it? You know, we attract a lot of people to it, families from Capitol Hill, Hill staffers, and people taking the metro, just hopping off at Capitol South and enjoying the movie outside the library.
Awesome. Well, we're glad that you filled that void and have kept it going since 2017. Annual tradition, summer fun now. All right. Well, without further ado, let's go into the lineup. So it's going to be every Thursday here over the next couple weeks, I think. Yeah, Thursdays. So tell us the first Thursday, July 6th, you know, 4th of July weekend, we'll have hopefully the fireworks will smoke will have dissipated in time. Tell us why Iron Man from 2008, it sort of, you know, it launched the whole Marvel universe and why it was a natural pick for the registry.
Absolutely. So one thing we're doing this year, Jason, is we're all the films that we're screening are based on books or stories because we're building up to the National Book Festival, which is on August 12th. So we decided why not tell stories and how they were interpreted on film leading up to the big film festival. And of course, the Library of Congress has one of the largest comic book collections. So we decided, why not? We added Iron Man last year, and we even spoke to Kevin Feige about it. And he told us all the history of, you know, the gamble they did when creating Iron Man. It was the first film of the Marvel film, Marvel universe. And he was explaining it was a big gamble for them because if it didn't work, they couldn't do all what, you know, all the other films. So they took a gamble on Robert Downey Jr. Then it just, you know, it just exploded to what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is now. And of course, you know, we can't think of superhero films nowadays without Robert Downey Jr. or the, you know, the whole cast of the Avengers. So we believe it's the best way to start the film festival this year. And with one of the, our new classics.
Yes, and such a good point. It's hard to believe in you know, in hindsight, that it was a gamble on Robert Downey Jr., but it was like, you know, I guess there was like some legal trouble and some other things like back in the day. And people weren't sure, you know, whether he could carry a whole franchise. And now in hindsight, it seems so silly. But yeah, like I can't imagine a better casting, a pairing of actor and role than Tony Stark and Robert Downey Jr. Yeah.
He's going to go down in cinematic history with this role. Robert Downey Jr. is so successful as an actor, but I think his role as Iron Man has really kind of cemented his, you know, his role in history.
Absolutely. All right. So that's an amazing way to kick it off on Thursday, July 6th. The following week on Thursday, July 13th. This one's a classic. So why are we playing Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory from 1971?
Well, Willy Wonka was based on Roald Dahl's book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And, you know, everybody remembers watching this film. If you're young enough, you probably watched it on TV or, you know, you rented the DVD. If you're, you know, a little bit more mature, you probably remember when it first came out. But you know, it brings out so many emotions, you know, from the songs, you know, the Oompa Loompa songs, you know, A World of Pure Imagination. And you don't need a golden ticket, clearly, to come to the library to watch this. It's just going to, you know, pull on your heartstrings and just remind you of your childhood.
Absolutely. And when Gene Wilder walks out and he's like, you know, walking with the cane and you think he's like, you know, aging and decrepit. And then he does that little somersault and hops up. From that point forward, we're like, oh, my gosh, anything could happen in this movie, in this world of pure imagination. I love it.
Exactly. Plus, you know, the reboot's coming out later this year with Timothée Chalamet. So I'm hoping it kind of gets it, you know, gets the chocolate flowing when the new movie comes out.
It'll be cool to see where Timothée Chalamet ranks against Gene Wilder and Johnny Depp and all the different versions. It'll be cool. But come see the original here outside the Congress. All right. Library of Congress. All right. So week three on July 20th is another. I mean, it's a, I guess, relatively newer movie, but an instant classic when it came out in 2001. Shrek. Why'd we go with Shrek?
Well, Shrek, you know, it's based on so many other stories that are, you know, all the other characters that are in that animated movie. But, you know, Shrek, people tend to forget this was DreamWorks' first animated film. So it really put them on the map when it comes to these type of films. And it, you know, made them a serious contender in competing with Disney and all the other studios out there. But, you know, since then, Shrek has, you know, spawned so many other sequels. It even became a Broadway show. So it's, again, been part of the fabric of our film history. And, you know, you can't think of more newer classics when it comes to animated films and not include Shrek. We all want to see Donkey. We all want to see Shrek. We want to see Princess Fiona. So I think this is very well loved.
Not my gumdrop buttons. Don't forget about the gingerbread boy.
Yes.
Who is it? Is it John Lithgow as Lord Farquaad?
Try not to say that because I was nervous something else will come out of my mouth.
And that was intentional, I'm sure. They were all, you know, spoofing Disney and everything. Yeah. But yes, we should say that, you know, that Shrek will always have a place in history. Is the Academy Awards invented the best animated Oscar just for Shrek, because, you know, before Beauty and the Beast or whatever, it would have to get nominated for best picture. But here Shrek was like such a phenomenon. They're like, it deserves its own category.
Yeah. It's hard to believe that film came out 22 years ago. So, it did really start this new trend of these animated films just being serious contenders for just not just great animated films, but as great films, period.
Exactly. All right. And then Thursday, July 27th, one of my all-time favorite comedies, I guess you could say romantic comedies even, Groundhog Day from 1993. You all inducted into the film registry in 2006. So it got in pretty shortly after it was released. And I understand why. Like, one of the most genius premises ever. Harold Ramis is just a genius. Rest in peace. But talk about why you went with this. It's been imitated so many times, but never bettered.
I was about to say, yes, there's been so many other films, especially recently, that have kind of explored the time loop story. But this was the original. Everybody remembers waking up with Bill Murray to Sonny and Cher and all the shenanigans that happened day after day after day. But, you know, what people don't remember, this actually is based on a book by a German philosopher, because he believes the book was about this man who was going through the same day over and over. So that's where Danny Rubin and Harold Ramis based this film from. And, you know, how could you not include this film? As you mentioned, this film was one of the first films added to the registry. And I feel like, you know, people loved it when it first came out. It was an instant classic. So I think, you know, people are going to love it again.
Wow, that's awesome. And I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, is based on like a philosopher's story, which is, of course it is, which is because it's like such an existential movie. And that to me is what elevates it beyond, you know, just a regular romantic comedy, which is great. It's hilarious. You know, watch that first step. It's a doozy. There's so many. It's great. Hilarious. Bill Murray's, you know, dry, you know, sarcasm. But I really think the existential nature of it, and, you know, it sort of inspires us of, you know, what are we doing with our day in and day out? Are we taking it for granted? Are we using it to help other people? Are we, improving ourselves every day? Like it is a really deep movie in addition to being heartfelt and hilarious.
Absolutely. And people really kind of geek out about this movie. It's unexpected. You know, some people have actually analyzed how many days the Bill Murray character was going through this time loop, because, you know, he was able to master so many stuff. Can't remember how many days. I remember reading it recently, like how many days would have taken for him to master all these talents.
Yeah, like so learning the piano and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like, you know, people get into it. Yeah. And that's a sign of a successful film.
I like when he's trying to count down to go steal the money out of the car, and he's like 10, 9, 8, car, 6. It's just great. It's funny stuff, man. All right. Well, all right. And then I guess the penultimate week here, Thursday, August 3rd, Mary Poppins. I believe I read somewhere that Walt Disney himself, that this was his favorite, and that Feed the Birds, Tuppence a Bag was like his favorite song of any of his movies, which is, a high bar. But yeah, talk about why Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke. I mean, why is this musical going to be so much fun out there on the lawn?
I mean, come on. It's like one of the best musicals out there. Like, we want families to come to the library and sing along. As you mentioned, everybody wants to sing A Spoonful of Sugar or Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Everybody knows the lines, and we want them to sing and have fun with it. But, you know, remember, this movie was based from a series of books by P.L. Travers. And, you know, Walt Disney himself courted P.L. Travers, trying to encourage her. It's like, you know, we really want to turn this into a film. And, you know, she was a hard sell, but Walt Disney ultimately won. But also, I kind of want to mention that the Library of Congress's prints and photographs division, we have some of the original illustrations that were made for the books. So, you know, we love spotlighting some collection items that are also connected to the film. And people tend to forget Julie Andrews won the Oscar for Best Actress for Mary Poppins, which is kind of... no one expected that back then. You know, everybody wanted her to win for these other films, but it was Mary Poppins that got her that Oscar.
Yes. And just to piggyback on that fact, because the trivia gets even cooler and cooler, I'm sure you know this, but for our listeners, she was on Broadway in My Fair Lady in Eliza Doolittle. But when they went to go make the movie version of My Fair Lady, they brought over Rex Harrison and the whole cast. But they were like, that Julie Andrews isn't famous enough. We want a movie star. Let's put Audrey Hepburn instead as Eliza. And then Julie Andrews is like, oh, wow, that kind of stinks. But all right, I'm going to go make Mary Poppins. And she beats Audrey Hepburn for the Oscar. I thought that's so cool.
I can't remember if Audrey was even nominated. But yes, that was kind of Julie Andrews' sweet little win there.
Yes,
she was able to win the Oscars though.
That's awesome. And of course, The Sound of Music the next year, and the rest is history. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned A Spoonful of Sugar and Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Most movies would kill just to have, you know, two songs that big in it, but Mary Poppins also had, you know, Jolly Holiday and Chim Chim Cheree and Step in Time and Let's Go Fly a Kite. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous. Those songwriters were, what was it, Sherman and Sherman were, I don't know what they're having for breakfast, but man.
Every single song from that musical is a classic. You know, some musicals, you know, there's a couple that people don't remember, but I believe everybody knows every single song from Mary Poppins. Yeah.
Start to finish. All right. Well, we could geek out on Mary Poppins all day. Sounds like, but we have one more movie to talk about in the series on Thursday, August 10th, closing it out. It is the quintessential perfect summer movie, Jaws.
Yes. You know, it was the very first summer blockbuster. And it was Steven, one of Steven Spielberg's first, and it was based on the novel by Peter Benchley. And, you know, what's memorable about this movie, of course, is not only the big shark, but it's the score and the theme song. Everybody remembers that. Just a couple notes, and it made you nervous to go into the water. John Williams' score is actually part of the Library of Congress's collection. We have so much connected to this film. So we're so excited to show it.
That's what's so cool about this is, you know, not only they can see the movie, but then if they want to go back on a return trip, you know, another day or whatever or earlier that day to the Library of Congress, and they can see, like you're saying, the score of John Williams or you know, there's so many cool artifacts with each of these movies. That's what's so cool about it. And you mentioned that it's like the original blockbuster, but yeah, let's speak to like more about like how, it's even better than it was almost a blessing in disguise that the robotic shark didn't work, right? Like it was malfunctioning in the water. And I think Spielberg originally was planning on showing it more often during these shark attacks. But I think nowadays, looking back, it that would have sort of dated the movie because, you know, the shark wouldn't have looked realistic or whatever. But it's more suspenseful that you don't see it. And all you see is that POV of swimming under the water at these bathers' legs as they get yanked underwater to that John Williams score. Like, don't you think that makes it scarier? That which we don't see is always scarier.
Absolutely. You only see the shark, you know, not too many times, but I think because you were seeing it from the perspective of the swimmer, and that's what made it so intense. Like, what is coming towards these legs and what's pulling them down is what made it really terrifying.
Yep. And it has one of the all-time great jump scares in it too, but we won't reveal it. But and ironically, the shark's not even part of that jump scare, but you probably know which one I'm talking about.
Exactly.
There's a boat involved. All right. Well, you're going to need a bigger boat and you're going to need a bigger lawn for this series. So thank you so much for doing this. These are great picks. They're all classics. You can't go wrong with any of them. So head out any of those Thursdays or all of them and enjoy.
Yes. Just come, you know, with a bigger picnic basket or a bigger kind of lawn, a blanket, and enjoy the movies outside the library.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for doing this. I could chat with you all day. It's so much fun. Thanks again.
You could completely nerd out with all these trivia.
Yeah, exactly. The trivia spawns more trivia, but we have to rein ourselves in. We have to force ourselves to cut it off here. We just have to.
Well, I appreciate it, Jason.
All right, Roswell. Thanks so much.